This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, Tim Echols, coming to you from our studio here in Athens at WGAU with Logan Booker producing. In the studio, packed full of folks from the UGA Law School, Professor Dr. Adam Orford. Welcome back, sir.
Commissioner, it's great to see you. Thanks for having us today.
A friend of the program, and I'm a friend of your class, right? You come in here, and I show up in your class and speak every year.
Looking forward to having you here again this semester.
Yeah, if you have never met Dr. Orford, he came in to fill a needed slot that we have. I have a lot of energy lawyers up here before me at the Public Service Commission, Dr. Orford, but not many of them trained at UGA, a lot trained in other places. Why did UGA stand up this special program that you're leading?
Well, you know, this is the first renewable energy curriculum, as I understand it, that has been offered in the state of Georgia. And part of it was just my interest in bringing it here when I was hired to work at UGA. They needed an environmental law professor. They got me in, and that came with what I do.
Well, let's introduce our students in the studio today, because they are all a part of the National Environmental Law Moot Court Competition, and introduce them for us.
Hi, I'm Emily Wood. I'm a 2L at UGA Law.
Hi, I'm Joseph Will. I'm also a 2L at UGA Law.
And I'm Drake Jones, also in my second year at UGA Law.
Yeah, Dr. Orford, the second year, I guess the first year of law school, I mean, I have three degrees from UGA. My brother's a UGA law grad. I guess that first year, you're seeing if you can cut it, right? And then the second year, are you kind of settling into, you know, some of the programs offered?
That's right. I think the first year, the curriculum is almost entirely the same for all students. After that, they, in the second year, get to take more electives. I've had a couple of these students in my environmental law class, in my renewable energy class, for example. So you start to be able to both participate in subjects that you like and also more experiential learning opportunities like the moot court.
Emily, let me start with you, and I'm going to ask each of you initially the same question. As you've taken this this course, and I know you're not done with it, but what is it about environmental law that particularly interests you now that you've, you know, had some experience with it?
I think environmental law is a field that's constantly changing, and it's been really interesting to learn more about it as we kind of practice our oral argument skills and grow as attorneys.
Yeah, how about you, Joseph?
Yeah, it's just, you know, conservation and environmental issues are important to me, and so I wanted to use my law degree to sort of explore this area and, you know, just perhaps pursue a career, you know, doing something that I am passionate about.
And how about you, Drake?
I think it's cool. It's an intersection of science and also economics, and you're seeing, like, how incentives shape things, but you're also learning about, you know, the science behind it. So it's not just, like, another law class.
Professor, on my way to this recording today, I got a call from an environmental lawyer who is seeking to have a dam removed on a wild and scenic river that borders Georgia and South Carolina. He's tried this before. There's a lot of federal incentives for this, but of course we are in need of power in Georgia. I did a motion to try to get this process started back in 22 to study it. Was unable to get the motion done because these dams are producing clean energy, and it's you're kind of torn with whether to get rid of it, right? Because it's some of the cleanest energy that we've got that's been going for 100 years. So, but there's a perfect case where there's a lawyer seeking to remove a dam to make a wild and scenic river go longer, right? And having to deal with all the sediment that's backed up for 100 years, and what are you going to do with all that? So, perfect. Perfect case, right?
You know, these renewable energy issues are always about trade-offs. There's always costs with whatever resource that it is that we're using. In fact, I was just showing my students in renewable energy law class the Klamath dams that are coming down. And, you know, this argument is happening all over the country. Should we transition away from the hydropower resources we have? If we do, are we losing low-carbon resources that might otherwise keep our grid clean? it's a policy argument. It's an argument that is going to change from facility to facility, and that's why we have folks like yourself tasked with the difficult challenges of making the decisions ultimately.
Let me ask you, Drake, Joseph, and Emily, the same question. I'm going to start with Drake this time. If you're just joining us, I've got three UGA 2L law students here and their professor. Drake, you know, what has surprised you? And I'm going to ask your colleagues the same question. As you've dived into the deep end here with renewable energy law and all other types of things, what has really surprised you about what you've heard or learned?
I think the most surprising thing is something Professor Orford said several weeks ago. There's no such thing as a free lunch. I think I entered it a little naive, thinking we were going to save the planet. We're going to make all these, you know, learn about all these great ways to save the planet, help people. But you find that even transitioning to renewable energies has costs that affects people's jobs. It has effects on the environment. You got to figure out how are we going to build stuff using clean energy. It's not as simple as just, well, we'll switch to something newer and cleaner.
Yeah, same question to you, Joseph.
I think what's really surprised me is I think just on one hand, how complex it is. The problems, I mean, the more you learn, the more you realize just what you don't know. And I mean, it's just a field where it is, I think, very challenging. And it, you know, it's like Drake said, I mean, you come in thinking you're going to do all this great public interest work, but it really is. I mean, there's a lot of trade-offs and, you know, just a lot of factors you need to consider. So I think just the complexity and the difficulty of the field was definitely challenging.
And how about you, Emily?
I kind of touched on this earlier, but I think it really is a field that's changing every day. Our moot court problem touches on a statute from the 1930s, and it's just fascinating to see, even almost a century later, there's still really topical decisions coming out every day.
Yeah, before we get into that moot court problem, of welcoming in my co-host, Casey Boyce. Casey, at the commission, I regularly have lawyers that are in front of me, either, you know, representing, you know, MARTA or Sierra Club or GIPL or Georgia Power. I mean, all of them use lawyers because we're dealing with the law, right? And lawyers have been trained. They understand kind of the judicial nature at the commission because you've got witnesses, you've got the commissioners who are kind of judge and jury. I mean, lawyers are very important as we think about this clean energy revolution.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what folks have been talking about here, right, this idea that there's a lot of nuance and being able to sort through that is definitely a good skill set, right? It's that logical thinking that the legal profession brings to these kinds of things that, you know, isn't often appreciated by others. So that's great to hear.
You know, one of the things that happens, and people are passionate when it comes to energy and in the environment, but lawyers in general have to dial back the passion, right? When they're in front of the commission, they're really expected to follow protocol, right? And they're expected to, you know, cross-examine in a logical way and to not lead witnesses and not to, you know, belittle the commissioners or say things that maybe they might say if they were out there at some kind of rally, right, Professor?
I think what I'll say is it's important for us to train law students both to be passionate and knowledgeable about the subject matter, but also fundamentally to be good lawyers. The UGA advocacy program, which is what this moot court is a part of, is first or second ranked in the country because we focus on training folks to practice law and we want them to understand the intricacies of doing that and the responsibilities of doing that and how hard it is sometimes to do that while also feeling very passionately about your work and also representing people who perhaps feel even more passionately about it, but need help translating that passion, those concerns into legally cognizable statements, claims, and interfacing with legal decision makers.
Let's talk about this moot court problem that you guys were involved with. Emily, I'm going to start with you to kind of tell our audience, what is moot court? I mean, is there like a jury? Is there a, you know, is there a, you know, is it like a courtroom, you know, that you would see maybe in a courthouse, or is it an appellate court, something that we might see like at the Supreme Court?
Sure. So moot court focuses on a moot appellate problem. So something that's not really, doesn't really matter which way it comes out. It's not a real issue. And we're focusing on the oral advocacy part of that. So it's just attorneys or mock attorneys arguing in front of justices. And what we're practicing doing is advocating for our clients as well as we would as a real attorney.
And Joseph, what is the legal problem that you all were involved with?
Well, there are actually five separate problems. It involves FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's approval of a pipeline that's going through a number of people's properties, including a religious organization that has a sort of animistic faith where they worship the environment, the holy order of Mother Earth. And our problem is basically questioning whether the commission acted properly in approving the pipeline, whether it properly weighed the costs and benefits of doing so, and also whether or not this violates the religious freedom of the organization that's affected. And so there's really several different problems we're tackling, and I think all of us have split it up to where we're all arguing each of the five problems separately, because we're going to be representing, there are three parties out of the problem, so we'll just be representing the different groups and arguing each problem.
Yeah, just another minute in this segment. Drake, you went to a Christian undergrad university. Is it difficult having to kind of put on a objective hat and, you know, and argue for a group with an animistic faith like we're talking about here, or is it something that's pretty easy?
I think that Professor Orford said just last week, you're not the party that you're representing. You are their attorney. And so you may not agree exactly with what they believe, but being a good attorney, as long as you have legal grounds for your argument, you can still argue for them. So in terms of my background and coming to terms with that, I don't see an issue with that. I'm defending their constitutional rights.
Well, coming up, this same group in our next segment, Professor Orford, Emily Joseph Drake, and Casey and I, as we dig into more about this moot court problem, more about what it's like to be an attorney these days, the important role they play in our society. This is Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, Tim Eccles here for GEM Car Wraps. GEM Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles. So check it out, GEM Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com, and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. Hey, Tim Eccles back on Energy Matters, a studio full of guests, Professor Adam Orford from UGA, Emily Joseph and Drake, there are two L's there, Casey Boyce, my co-host, and me. Dr. Orford, we're talking about this National Environmental Law Moot Court competition that your students have participated in. Why is moot court an important thing for up-and-coming lawyers to participate in?
We talk about experiential education opportunities, meaning there are times when you have to learn things in the classroom substantively, and there are times when you need to learn by doing. And increasingly, we understand that you don't become a good lawyer simply in the classroom. So things like oral advocacy skills, things like thinking on your feet when somebody asks you a tough question, things like acting in the role of advocate for a different party on a short order, changing your mind on the fly, none of those things are taught in the classroom. So we try to give them problems, and this is a national competition out of Pace Law School in New York. We'll be competing with a lot of other teams, and that's another part of it. Law is a competitive industry and profession, and so having the opportunity to test your mettle against other schools and not surprisingly in my view, but maybe for them, beating schools that you might not expect going into it are going to be so beatable. That's the fun part.
The South got something to say, huh?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Joseph, I want to pick up on something that you mentioned in our first segment, right? The idea that within this moot court competition, there are actually five separate legal problems that you're dealing with. And I was wondering if you could kind of, each of you, talk a little bit more about that in the sense that, you know, you're dealing with this case that's a, you know, pipeline and a FERC decision. At the end of the day, the public sees pipeline gets built or pipeline doesn't get built, right? But there are these individual factors within it that you've got to really understand, and it sounds like maybe even advocate for different sides at different times. Can you talk about kind of the granular nature of that versus the overall, you know, pipeline gets approved versus not, right?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, FERC can't just, you know, approve a pipeline for any reason. It does have to first show that it will serve a public benefit, and that's one of the issues in the problem. Because in the hypothetical pipeline, the like 90% of the gas is actually going to be exported to a country that we don't really trade with. And so, you know, there's a question first of whether or not this should even be built. And then there's a second question as to whether or not the benefits of the pipeline outweigh the costs and all of the eminent domain involved. And so, and then additionally, there's the issue of religious freedom here, because the pipeline would be built on a religious land and against the faith of the group. So it's really just whether or not the pipeline is properly been approved, whether it serves the benefits that FERC is allowed to consider. And also FERC, in constructing the pipeline, they also want to impose conditions on the pipeline related to greenhouse gas and whether or not they should include upstream and downstream effects of that. And the different parties obviously have different views as to what conditions should be imposed. There's a private pipeline company that doesn't want to follow the greenhouse gas conditions, whereas the religious group wants more conditions imposed. So it's just really whether or not FERC is properly approving this.
And Emily, my understanding is that you have to advocate for these different positions at different points. How is that from your standpoint? Is it easy to kind of put yourself in that different mindset and serve as the advocate? Is it something that's challenging to do? Let's talk a little bit about that.
I think this particular problem is interesting because two of the parties involved, one is the government, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, one is a pipeline company, and one is this religious group that has these strongly held religious beliefs. So it's interesting between the government and the pipeline company, understanding their substantially similar arguments and how they're slightly different, and then switching gears entirely to argue from the religious perspective, something that you might not necessarily, it's kind of a niche religious belief, so you don't fully understand what their beliefs are, but it's really interesting.
Drake, I know that the Keystone Pipeline was controversial, and other, frankly, any pipeline is controversial these days. One of the things about the oil sands in Alberta and that oil that was going down to our refineries, that if it wasn't in a pipeline, it was in a tanker car. So it was going either way. Did that issue ever come up by anyone, any of the, quote, justices who were asking questions? Was that a factor?
Absolutely. You have to consider what are the alternatives to this proposed pipeline, and was the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, were they acting arbitrarily by not considering some of those alternatives? So depending on what side we're arguing, we might be saying, yeah, this pipeline is not the best way to accomplish this. There are better ways. And then depending on which side we're arguing on, we have to consider what the pros and cons are to be able to argue all sides. But I think that that actually makes us more honest advocates, because no matter what side you're arguing, you know what the weaknesses are, because in the next round, you're going to be arguing for the other side.
Casey, you know, pipelines are always controversial. We had the pipeline hack that impacted Georgia. They shut it down for a couple of days until they could figure it out. They had to pay a ransom for it. Fortunately, it wasn't our methane pipeline because we are about 50% natural gas here in Georgia, and cutting off that natural gas, you know, would have had, you know, a great impact in our state. So, you know, there are other kind of collateral issues, you know, that could play a role.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the energy infrastructure, and I think, Drake, you hit it, sort of this idea that, you know, different alternatives, and you know, you all were talking about it in the first segment, right? That it's not as clean cut as pipeline, no pipeline, that there's always something that's going to happen in terms of the energy infrastructure. Maybe it's the, you know, the end use, the export doesn't get built, right? It was actually interesting with the Biden administration recently announcing that they were suspending LNG export permits, and some of the reactions to that that I saw, Commissioner, and I, you know, curious, you know, your take on this, but a lot of them really didn't understand the market dynamics and what it actually meant to lock in natural gas capacity here in the U.S.
Well, I still have a bad taste in my mouth from all of that LNG going to bail out Europe, France, Spain, Portugal, the UK, the Netherlands, because they were getting that Russian gas. They stopped. They looked to us for the exports, and the impact on Georgia ratepayers was $16 a month because our gas prices went up. Dr. Orford, you know, you've lived in New York, you've lived in California, Arizona, pipelines maybe not as controversial in Georgia, but certainly in some of those places you've lived, they're very controversial.
So this is why this problem is so good. This is introducing our students to these conflicts for the first time, perhaps, and getting to see that it's not just whether or not to build something, it's not just the impacts on one property. World geopolitics are implicated, but so are the interests of the folks who are on the root of the pipeline. And how do we ultimately use the law to answer the question of, should we do this? What has Congress said? What can FERC do that changes? I should mention as well, administrative law is under enormous change right now. The Supreme Court is deciding what agencies can't and can't do without congressional approval right now. The controversy is the bonus for us as attorneys, right? We get to understand it and then help advocate for outcomes based on what our clients want. I think as citizens, this is also important to be introduced to because, for example, natural gas. Should we build a power system that's reliant on it, or should we incorporate more renewable energy into the grid that we have, you know, the independent capacity to produce ourselves? What do we do with natural gas export, especially if that export is developed in Texas? Is that a benefit to Georgia? The same questions are coming up in the context of this problem.
Just a couple more minutes left in this segment. I've got Professor Orford. Now, you just heard him speaking. He's a professor at UGA, went to Columbia in New York, got his law degree there, got a PhD at Berkeley in California, did his undergrad at ASU. Got Emily Joseph and Drake here, of course, me and Casey. Drake, let me go to you. Casey mentioned about the LNG export and the Biden administration kind of scaling back on that. So there's an instance where the president is doing it to, quote, maybe satisfy a certain constituency he has, a constituency maybe that hates methane. So he was excited about. I, on the other hand, have no problem with methane, but I'm concerned about rates in Georgia. So I was actually happy that, okay, maybe our gas prices will go down here in Georgia and reduce our avoided cost of energy. When you add politics into something, it really complicates it, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And you'd like to think that, you know, our vote and by electing these officials, we have some kind of control over it, but it certainly doesn't feel that way sometimes when they make some of these choices, and you wonder, is that what I would have done, even if you voted for that person?
Emily, in a politics is a strange thing. Just another minute here in this segment. Do you like politics in general? Is law school making you like it more or less?
I think law school is making me view it differently. Kind of like we were saying earlier, you kind of learn to think from different perspectives and put yourself in the shoes of arguing that perspective.
Yeah, Joseph, how about you when it comes to politics? I'm not going to ask you what your politics are, but in general, are you learning that politics really impacts just about everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, there's always that political consideration behind the law. And, you know, as much as you want to think that maybe the law is this great, like, objective thing, you know, guided by reason, I think politics at the end of the day really is driving a lot of this.
Casey, just another 30 seconds here. Laws are made by politicians.
They are, and they can be changed by politicians. So, I mean, it's a very interesting play, right?
Yeah, well, stick around. We've got these three 2L students in the studio. They're coming back, their professor, Dr. Adam Orford, Casey, and I, as we continue to talk about their experience in this National Environmental Law Moot Court competition. I'm going to ask them how they did and you know, how they found that appellate experience, if it makes them want to do it full time. We'll hear more about what Dr. Orford's doing semester after semester. This is Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities' demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Hello, island friends. Let me tell you about Tim Eccles. Mr. Tim loves Georgia and helped keep our rates low. He knows everything about energy and has led by example. I hope you listen to his radio show called Energy Matters. Join me in supporting Tim.
Hey, Tim Eccles back in studio at our beloved home station, WGAU. My producer, Logan Booker, here in a studio full, using every mic and some of them twice, with our guest from the UGA Law School. Dr. Orford, I spent a lot of time at UGA, and I have 3 degrees, and you know I'm proud of that. But you know, the most important thing that I got out of UGA was Wendy Davis, my wife of 40 years. I'm so glad that I met her there. So sometimes college is more than just about studying, right?
I met my own wife at Berkeley, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we've got Emily, Joseph, and Drake. And Emily, let me start with you. You know, you guys are going to be competing in this. You've been practicing, and you're obviously very familiar with this problem. And in moot court, you got to be prepared to argue both sides, right? Which side of this particular problem about the pipeline do you like arguing?
I enjoy arguing the government side, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And I think I like that side because the second issue is about public benefits versus adverse effects of the pipeline. And as someone who enjoys the outdoors, I think it would be difficult for me to argue that the public benefits are greater than the adverse effects personally. From the government side, though, the facts are there and the legal argument's strong. So,
Joseph, what about you? What do you enjoy arguing?
I also enjoy arguing the government, I think for the same reason. I mean, I personally, you know, I consider myself to be an environmentalist. So this, you know, approving this kind of pipeline does go against my beliefs. So it's sort of a challenge to, you know, be able to put myself in the shoes of like a government lawyer and sort of push myself to actually come up with, you know, good arguments that I can believe for this thing that I don't necessarily agree with.
How about you, Drake?
I take a different direction from my classmates here. I think arguing for the religious organization is very challenging. And because of that, I think it's interesting. You have to make very nuanced arguments and make what kind of seems like maybe an odd or silly religious practice seem like something that deserves serious attention from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Casey, you know I have deeply held religious beliefs, right? I'm an evangelical Christian, and I sometimes have people that want me to, you know, maybe separate that from anything that I'm doing, and it's really impossible for me to do that because it informs my view of morality, of integrity, of service. And I know we've been to your church. Your church received an Energy Matters Sustainability Award. I know that faith and religious expression very important to you as well.
Yeah, although in a very different way, right? And I think that's one of the very interesting things. And you all talked about this, right? This, and Drake, you in particular, kind of this idea of when you're serving as an attorney, you have to represent the client. It's not necessarily yourself. So there is, I think, maybe inherent in it a little bit of that distancing that Tim's saying is a little bit hard for him. But, you know, I'll ask you, but the rest of you are welcome to chime in as well. How does that kind of play out in terms of your ability to sort of step back and say, okay, you know, my beliefs are here, but I've got to advocate over here because I'm serving this role for the client?
Sure. We were in a practice round just last week, and the judge was asking me, when I was representing the religious organization, what kind of greenhouse gas restrictions would be appropriate here? Like, how much is too much? And I was too eager. I said, you know, let's go all the way. Let's get, you know, the strictest restrictions we can. But I lost myself. I forgot I am their attorney, and I need to be making strong policy arguments, not maybe what I would personally want.
Yeah, there goes that passion we were talking about in a previous segment, being able to kind of hold that in check. One of the best attorneys that we have that appears before us is my predecessor, Bobby Baker, who served on the PSC for 18 years. So he had my seat. He stepped down. I won the seat, but he is so objective, unemotional, you know, as he goes through and cross-examines power company witnesses or whoever. He's just Professor Orford. He's so systematic and so I won't use the word lethal, because you know, you're persuading commissioners, and there's other factors in there, but that objectivity, that's huge.
So this whole conversation reminds me of what is valuable about the law and the existence of rules that we should all be bound by and that describe and contain our actions when maybe we want to do something a different way or think something should be a particular way. We follow the rules that our society has created for us, provided that the system of creating the rules is fair, that we have a legislature that's representative of our society, our polity. And through that system, we come up with the rules that then it doesn't matter necessarily what Drake thinks about what should be done, or even the policy arguments in court. The court wants to know, what does the law say? What does the law allow this commission to do? And if those rules have been satisfied, then everything is fine. Or if someone is saying that they haven't been satisfied, not because it's a bad idea, but because the agency hasn't done its job correctly. And that distinction between what should be done, which is something the law should answer for us, and then how well the agency has done it, is a technical distinction in court that a lot of, I would say, you know, non-lawyers don't appreciate, is so important.
He's Dr. Adam Orford. He's got his law students in the studio with Casey and I. Casey, a couple years ago, I had gone to North Dakota, and I had gone up to the Three Tribes Reservation, and I was invited to be a part of the, and this is their word, Indian Rodeo. And it was run by tribal members and exclusively for tribal members. I sat under the tent of the chief. I was there, and of course I had this radio show, and I said, man, I've got to do some interviews here. And there was a tremendous number of fracked wells on this North Dakota reservation. And my eyes were open that day because These tribal members said to me, so many tribes are dependent upon the U.S. government. He said, we have experienced a measure of freedom here. We've got that new school over there. We've got that new Heritage Center. The parking lot of the rodeo was full of F-250 King Ranch trucks with expensive aluminum horse trailers. They were experiencing a lot of prosperity. And that prosperity informed their view of life and fracking. Drake, you hear a story like that and you realize, wait a second, cable news out there may not be telling the entire story in that two-minute piece that they're doing, right?
I think that's definitely true. And you know, I grew up on a farm, and I remember thinking an F-250 is exactly what I would want to drive probably for the rest of my life. I think in situations like that, there's a lot of things to think about. I think there's sort of a like a walk before you run, you know, like I said earlier, no such thing as a free lunch. You kind of have to consider all of your options before you just say, hey, we need to go all the way to the left or right on an issue.
So I want to come back to something Emily and Joseph, you both said earlier, you're environmentalists and you enjoy arguing the side of the government. And I'm wondering if maybe we can sort of step outside of the moot court, and what would your advice be for other people who are trying to see a change in something, whether it's, you know, advocating for an environmental outcome or otherwise, in thinking about these processes that happen before the Public Service Commission or FERC or other regulatory agencies? Like, what would you have someone who's not an attorney know?
I would say that, I mean, just realize that sometimes the law is not necessarily the best avenue for affecting this change. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, there is a lot of discretion to these regulatory commissions that, you know, are going to impose these pipelines. And so maybe not look towards the law as the best avenue. Maybe just get involved more at a local level. I think that being in law school, I kind of realized that environmental law isn't this magic bullet. It's going to require a lot more like local organizing and such.
Yeah, I think in 2020, there was a case in New Jersey called PennEast Pipeline. And there was just this huge grassroots movement against the pipeline from people in that area who didn't want it built. And ultimately, even though most of the court cases were against them, they were successful on the ground. So just understanding the power of grassroots movement can be really important.
So it sounds like it's not so much about understanding the law as it is understanding kind of where the different levers are to get what you're hoping to achieve. And Tim, I think this goes back to your point earlier about politicians make laws.
Yeah, that's right. And even those FERC commissioners are appointed by the President of the United States and have to be approved. And the party that has the White House gets the majority. And they don't have lifetime appointments, by the way. And Professor Orford, do lifetime appointments make a difference in objectivity, you think?
Oh my goodness. Depends on the context, and theoretically at least, for example, lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court is intended to separate the interests of that court from political interests. Does that always happen? Subject to debate. The class that I teach is called Renewable Energy Law and Policy. And policy is an important part of this entire discussion, right? What should happen, and how do we talk about that very tricky word, should. How do we talk about who benefits and loses and who should benefit and lose? How do we talk about the values of, for example, natural gas development on tribal lands, but also the impacts of the climate change that may be caused by the natural gas development on those same tribal lands 50 years from now? How do we balance harms and benefits to multiple people over multiple timescales and multiple geographies? Very complicated and challenging. And then how do we deal with the politics and the law and everything else?
When we come back, more about policy from these three law students and their professor, Casey and I, of course, here. Stick around, Energy Matters. We'll be right back with one more segment.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced, emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill, simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at SolarSunWorld.com. SolarSunWorld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles, back last segment in the studio with me, Dr. Adam Orford and three students, Emily Joseph Drake, and of course, my co-host, Casey Boyce. Dr. Orford, you teach this renewable energy law and policy. Why not just renewable energy law? Why throw in the whole policy thing?
First of all, because you cannot really get away from the policy questions in this area of law. The commissioners that are responsible for most of the decision-making at the state and federal level, as you already said, are in some degree representative of politics. And we are in a country that, unfortunately, I think, makes polarized politics part of its general situation. So what I have found is that there is an increasing interest in making it more partisan. Energy issues are seemingly becoming more partisan. But for some reason, there's also a possibility to reach across in a way that isn't always possible in other areas and work with folks who you might not agree with on everything. And yet you still find common ground. You and I, Commissioner, might not agree on every other thing, but we have, for example, a shared interest in the development of electric vehicles. And we can talk to each other and figure out, why is that? What is it about that that might get me excited about it versus you? And maybe it's domestic manufacturing jobs, maybe it's the climate change impacts, and maybe those things are different for different people, but we find ultimately that, yeah, we think this is a good idea. But if we don't have a shared language, and I don't teach that shared language, then it's very difficult to have those conversations or to even understand that they could happen. So the why end policy answer is because without it, we are not able to converse with people we disagree with.
Casey, whenever we have a docket, and folks don't know that much about the Public Service Commission, I mean, 99.99999999% of Georgians will never come into our hearing room. When we're going through something like an integrated resource plan or a rate case, at the end, after Georgia Power's had their attorneys, I mean, their witnesses and all the interveners like Sierra Club and City of Atlanta and MARTA and Georgia Manufacturers Association, they've had their witnesses and Georgia Power does a rebuttal. And then we are getting ready to vote as commissioners. Sometimes what you will hear the Georgia Power lawyers say about something like the Racy Anderson solar array on the right of way, or that Second Life EV battery thing that I was going to do. You'll hear the Georgia Power attorney stand at the microphone and say, this is a policy decision for the commissioners. And what that really means is we don't really have an opinion on this, and these commissioners can do whatever they want, right? So sometimes things are integral to what the utility wants to do, and sometimes it's kind of an add-on.
What is the Public Service Commission?
I think our listeners maybe are in that 0.0001% that know what the Public Service Commission is. So I mean, one of the things, Dr. Orford, that you mentioned, and I'd be curious, Emily Joseph and Drake, we'll start with you, your perspective on, Dr. Orford, you were kind of suggesting that this is an area, specifically energy policy, where we can work across partisan lines and we can get things done. It may not be what one side wants or the other side wants, but there's still this ability to get things done that seems to have kind of gone away in other aspects of American life. Drake, what's your perspective on that? And how do you think that could be used to kind of help rebuild civic engagement and working politics? Small question, I know.
Great question, Casey. I think, so I come from a very conservative background. I describe myself as a conservative. But when it comes to energy and environmental policy, I do not share a whole lot of views with a lot of conservatives. That's something that catches me flack at the Thanksgiving table. But I think that there is common ground to be found. So when I start talking about we should start producing more of our own energy through renewable sources, that connects with some of my conservative family members. They're like, yeah, America should take care of itself and produce its own stuff. We can build a lot of American jobs and renewable energy. That appeals to them too.
Joseph, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that completely. I think that, even though there is all that controversy about issues like climate change, I really do think that most people want a clean environment. They care about, preserving our, natural ecosystems. And I mean, environmental laws generally are very popular. And so I do think this is something that we could really, bridge the gap on.
Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. I think something Drake touched on earlier that's important is the economics that's tied in with law and environmental policy and understanding how different legal policies can incentivize different effects and affect change, I think could be really important in motivating the public.
So one of the principles, Tim, that I kind of heard each of them mention in different ways is this idea of finding what's important to other people, right? And Dr. Orford, you mentioned that in your comment about electric vehicles, right? You and Tim may care about it for different reasons, but you may be able to come together to find common ground and say, okay, this is a policy that works because it addresses something that we both care about.
And I would say that the challenge there is a very human tendency to just want to have the answer and to know that I know that electric vehicles don't work and I'm not going to need to know anything more about it, when in fact it's a nuanced and challenging area that you got to study pretty hard in order to really have a good informed opinion on, right? Which I know your listeners do, but that's a big ask for a lot of folks who don't think about this all the time. So my general message is to try to keep an open mind, right? I'll pick on the Wall Street Journal, which I read and enjoy, right? But its opinion pages often highlights the negative aspects of the renewable energy transition or electric vehicles. And just understand that that's a perspective and it's an incomplete perspective. Just like the folks who say, oh, this is the only thing we can do and have to do immediately, that's also incomplete, right? We're trying to find common ground by understanding that nothing is perfect, nothing is costless, and we're trying to find the best path forward for ourselves and for our children, for our futures. A lot of folks in good faith think that fossil fuels play a part of that. A lot of people in good faith think that renewable energy is the path forward. And if they don't talk to each other and work it out, our society suffers.
That's Dr. Adam Orford. You're just tuning in. We've had Dr. Orford and his three 2L students from the University of Georgia Law School our entire show today, Emily, Joseph, and Drake. Dr. Orford, I was out at the UCLA Luskin Center for a 100% clean energy conference that was mainly attended by cities across America. I think I was the sole Republican in the building. Beautiful campus, by the way, out there. And I rode the bus to get there, electric bus. Some of the sponsors of this event, the big money people that paid the university, to be able to get up and make their speech, it happens everywhere, a kind of a pay-to-play thing, they were all about, like utility-scale solar, rooftop solar, EVs, but they had all of these other side agendas that they wanted to bring in. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I love me renewable energy. I love utility-scale solar. I've had 7 EVs, but you're asking me to swallow all of these other issues, when it comes to like family size and whether you eat meat or not. And Drake, it was, it was a bit uncomfortable. And I asked them, I raised my hand, took the microphone, and I said, why can't you just advocate for the energy itself? Why is this a package? And he said, it is a package, and all of it has to go together. I mean, that I had a problem with it.
I think that most of us don't have lifetime appointments. We're thinking about, how are the people around me going to respond to the opinion that I have? Am I going to get reelected? Or even if you're not trying to be elected, are you going to be thought of well? You're considering the context around you. So we tend to kind of move as a group, unfortunately, that prevents us from actually looking at the technology and the science and finding nuance.
Yeah. Joseph, just as we wrap up here, 3 minutes remaining on our show. I mean, you can see me out there at UCLA kind of uncomfortable and raising this issue and me outnumbered, there and feeling like, wait a second, can't I just advocate for solar? Does it have to be all of the other stuff. And you know, and it was a package deal that they were pushing, and everybody out there was nodding their heads. They were okay with it, everybody but me.
Right. I mean, I think that's a bit of a mistake to sort of tie, you know, a sensible policy like, you know, EVs or, you know, renewable energies to these, you know, much more controversial issues like family size that people are obviously going to have, you know, very strong opinions on. And I think that it would be better if the environmental movement could focus more on these areas where we could find a common ground. I think that would lead to a lot more improvement in, you know, environmentalism in the United States.
Emily, I guess, you know, when you're trying to cobble together various interest groups to create a majority, it's majorities that control things. And I guess maybe the sponsor was feeling like, yeah, I'll just grab all of these issues and I'll pick up some of these folks here and these folks there, and I'll really have a strong majority. But I was kind of feeling left out.
Yeah, I think to tie it back to our moot court problem, it's important to understand how different issues fit together, where they are alike and where they're different. And I think when people try to tie a lot of issues together, sometimes some of those differences go overseen.
Dr. Orford, just wrapping up here today, tell us a little bit about how folks can find out about UGA Law. Maybe there's some students that are listening or parents that are going, wow, my child's applying for law school, or they've got an interest in this, or they argue with me and I think they'll be a good lawyer. What advice do you have for parents and kids that are out there listening?
Well, first of all, to go to law school, keep your grades up and study for and take something called the LSAT, the Law School Admissions Test. I'm proud to say that the University of Georgia School of Law is the most affordable top 20 law school in the country. We worry a great deal about our student debt. And so if that is something that interests you, I'm also proud to say that UGA Law is the number one choice of a majority of our students, right? Folks are here because they want to be. So we have a website, we have an admissions office, we conduct tours, and our professors are always happy to answer questions. Just reach out, our information is online. And if you feel like law is something that you are interested in pursuing, we are here to help you develop that skill set and career.
Well, thank you everyone for being with us today. Thanks to our law school students, Emily Joseph and Drake, Dr. Orford, of course, Casey, and to you, our listening audience. If you ever want to just catch the podcast, you can just search for Energy Matters with Commissioner Eccles wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend, everybody. You've been listening to Energy Matters.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.